to the John Vincent Hair Loss Dossier podcast series, bringing to you all that is new and important in the world of hair restoration, including real facts and new developments from the luminaries in the hair industry. This series, like my book, focuses on new technology and valid treatment options that help women and men regain self-esteem and confidence. And just as important, it will debunk the myths about hair loss and bogus treatments that can actually be detrimental to one's physical and mental health, not to mention their wallet. I'm John Vincent, your host. Today we're talking about the options for men and women to learn about the new technology in hair restoration from two recognized experts. Dr. Mark Waldman has taken over the practice of a well-respected pioneer of hair treatment surgery, Dr. William Parsley. And today we're fortunate to have Jerry Davis, a veteran patient counselor who shares his experiences with hundreds of men and women that he's helped find a capable and caring hair loss physician. Jerry's a patient himself and understands the deep emotional concerns of women with hair loss and men who want to get straight advice without the BS. So first off, Jerry, could you explain in that regard how counsel has shifted from people willing to talk on the phone rather than come in for a personal consultation?
Yeah, well, thanks, John. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to literally speak with thousands of both men and women regarding hair loss. And it all started with office meetings, face-to-face and consultations, you know, 15 years ago. And then as technology, you know, improved, we started doing more and more phone consultations, and now it's progressed to the point where it's sort of like telemedicine has evolved over the last, you know, few years. Many people are would prefer to actually have a consultation by phone than to take time out of their day to drive to the office. Really, the only thing that you, one of the only things that you can't really do over the phone that you can do in person is a video microscope scalp analysis. Outside of that, with the ability to share pictures in high resolution and be able to communicate either just by phone or, you know, Skype or FaceTime or other types of technology platforms, the client feels a lot more comfortable without having to travel to the office, and you can see a lot more people or talk to a lot more people.
And I imagine Jerry, that this way, you don't spend a lot of time with people who just casually walk in and aren't really serious, what we call tire kickers in the business.
Yes and no. The key there is, in as a lead is matured, or as a person shows an interest in hair restoration, then typically those individuals either weed themselves out once they do some basic research and find out either they don't have enough donor or enough budget. Those are two of the primary limitations. But if they get to the point where we're having a consultation with them, an in-depth consultation, then for the most part, they are very interested. They've done their homework. The ability with the internet now, they can research much easier today than they could a decade or so ago.
Okay. So in way of introduction, Dr. Waldman is a local graduate of the University School of Medicine and is board certified as a dermatologist and a member of many societies, most relevant to our talk, the International Society of Hair Restoration Surgery. My curiosity was stoked when I originally met him, as I learned he would be taking over the practice of Dr. William Parsley, who can only be described as an icon in the hair surgery practice. Practicing since 1974 and a past president of the ISHRS and the American Society of Hair Restoration Surgery, Dr. Parsley has received the industry's highest awards. Among them are the Golden Follicle and the coveted Manfred Lucas Award for his outstanding achievements. I've jokingly said that if you looked up the most respected names in medicine in the dictionary, I'm sure you'd find Dr. Parsley's name there, along with Marcus Welby. But all kidding aside, Dr. partially as a caring guy who shares his knowledge and helps train other physicians in the hair field. And it was an honor that he was one of the first colleagues to congratulate me on my book, Hair Loss Dossier. Happily, Dr. Waldman reports he is now enjoying, Dr. Parsley that is, a long-deserved retirement. So it was with great curiosity that I wondered how Dr. Waldman was going to be able to fill those ample shoes. So Dr. Waldman, tell us, what's it like to be replacing this legend of hair restoration?
Well, John, first of all, thank you for asking me to talk. You know, one of the things I've always tried to do over the years was learn as much as I can from Bill, and to the best of my ability, not to try to fill his shoes, because that you're asking, you know, it's something near impossible. I mean, when you look at all the accomplishments and everything he's done, it's like, you know, who took over for Michael Jordan, or, you know, you never want to be the guy, you never want to be the guy who takes over for the legendary coach, you know, the guy that took out, you know, the guy that came in after Red Auerbach. It's always the worst position to be in, because it's like you can never achieve that level. So my goal is to, you know, what were the basic tenets that Dr. Parsley taught me? You know, do what's best for the patient, give the patient natural results. So, you know, there's so many other things in there that he taught me, but what's best for the patient, natural results. And so that's what I try to keep in mind when I'm moving forward.
And how has your training as a dermatologist helped you in learning more about hair restoration?
It's been a really big help. I mean, as part of our training is we learn about, you know, obviously hair, skin, and nails. There are so many dermatologic issues involving the scalp. So not only do we learn about genetic alopecia, which is really just that's something we barely touch on in training, but all the other types of hair loss issues that people can come in with are a major help. You know, it's one of the things that you always worry about is transplanting somebody who is a medical therapy patient, you know, somebody who has a scarring alopecia or somebody who doesn't have a type of hair loss that really needs to be transplanted. So you really have all areas covered, not just the surgical, but the medical side as well.
You told me when we met that, I guess, like a lot of physicians, you kind of get interested in it when a family member or somebody you know is going through it. You had that experience with your dad, right?
Yeah. So the funny thing is, my dad, my whole life, I've never seen him with hair, except for maybe four or five on top of his head. And, you know, early in my training, when I was first starting to kind of go out and start to do them on my own, he was, you know, my first patient that we did. Bill, Dr. Parsley helped me with it. It was a big case. It was not one I could have done on my own initially. It was over 3,000 grafts, but he really didn't care that he had hair, but he just wanted me to get the practice. So he likes his hair now that he has more of it up top.
Cool, good. I want to talk a little bit about female patients and how we help them. Jerry, in your experience, as you counsel people, has there been an increase in the number of women interested in hair restoration? And I know we have other ways of helping them, but could you talk a little bit about your experience with female patients?
Well, yeah, thanks, John. I think that women's interest in solving their problem of hair loss has not really increased. It's just the solutions that we have to offer them have improved. And hair restoration practices in overall are more receptive of women patients. In the past, most hair restoration surgeons early on were reluctant to consider restoration on a woman. Unlike a man, it's men are accepted in society to lose their hair and have thinning hair. When women lose their hair, it's pretty devastating because it's not accepted in society. So women tend to want a lot more hair. Men are fine if they have a little bit. Like Dr. Waldman said, his father is very happy the fact he's got more hair now on top than he used to have. Women either want it all back or, you know, wear a wig. So what's happened over the years is the differences, I mean, the advantages of technology, or advancements in technology, I should say, have improved Now, the non-surgical therapies such as PRP, in addition to minoxidil, the Viviscals, Nutrafols, on top of certainly laser therapy, these are all things that we now have available to help a lady to stabilize her hair loss and to help rejuvenate what she has and prevent the need for hair restoration. But not always can you do that. Certainly, there's many women now that are needing and end up getting hair restoration on top of the non-surgical solutions. But just the advancements of technology and the new offerings that we have today, we see more women patient, but I don't think that's because they're interested more now. They've always been interested. Women have always been very proactive.
Yeah, and women are highly motivated, and when you can't fulfill what they need with hair transplantation, if there's a regimen that they need to follow to restore their hair, such as laser therapy, they will do it. I know that one of Mark's colleagues, Dr. Robert Haber in Cleveland, told me once that female patients were really the most difficult, females with hair loss were the most difficult patients because they wanted to spend a lot of time and there was nothing they could really do for them. Now that there's therapy approaches and possibly surgery, it makes those patients, they're more appreciative and more likely to go through the regimens.
Yeah, one big difference, John, with men and women is, and I'm sure John, you and both Mark would agree with this, that women, although difficult to solve the problem, are number one, more proactive than men, and number two, much more compliant. So if you recommend a lady to follow non-surgical therapy, they're much more likely to follow that recommendation than a man will. A man is more just, wants to get the hair restoration and not have to do anything else, wash and wear, but women will do whatever it takes to hang onto the hair they have.
Yeah. And one of the things I found in my clinic in California is that with the tools that we have now to analyze the hair with microscopes and devices that actually measure the density of hair, it helps to encourage the continuing treatment because you can actually demonstrate that the hair is improving.
Right.
And we talked in another interview with another physician about scalp micropigmentation. We won't talk about that today, but that's in another podcast of mine with Dr. William Rassman. So, Dr. Waldman, let's cover this topic of when do you recommend not doing a hair transplant, besides when you know that you can't fulfill the desire of what a woman wants in her hair?
If we're just speaking strictly about women, first thing right off the bat is a truly genetic hair loss. Women can, men, it's much easier to tell. They're very patterned. Women can sometimes have multiple things going on at once. They may have a little bit of genetic alopecia, but there could be a telogen effluvium, which is, a shedding process. It's out of whack, and it can be, that's more of a medical therapy, not a surgical therapy. Also, scarring alopecias are become much more, I don't want to say common, but we're diagnosing more things like frontal fibrosing alopecia. So some of these maybe mild scarring alopecias are not, at least early on, straight up surgical. The other one is some women, their donor hair is weak. You can have a guy who is slick bald up top and have just an incredible amount of donor hair. Women can be much more, can have much less donor hair, and their donor hair itself, instead of each hair follicle or each graft, they can be weaker. And so you may actually not be able to do what they want. So it can go beyond, hey, I want, here are my expectations. If the patient's saying, here are my expectations. And before you look at the patient, like, yeah, looking at you, I think I can meet that. But when you look at the donor hair, it may be not very good or might not be adequate enough to get to the area that to the expectation of the level that they want to get to.
And another situation which is more talked about, I don't know if it's more likely, but alopecia areata, you shared with me a photo in your office that was a miraculous return of hair. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Oh, yeah, that picture, I just saw her today. Alopecia areata It's medical hair loss. It's some people will transplant it. It's not my favorite thing to do. Typically, people get these round patches of hair loss, and in most people, it comes back on its own, or we can do intralesional injections or some other medical therapy, it goes away. However, some patients will literally lose all the hair on their body or all the hair on their head. And so the patient you're talking about, she essentially for years had almost no hair on her head. And when one of my partners retired and I picked her up, there's an article that came out where they had a patient on Xeljanz for psoriasis and they grow their hair back. Luckily, we're able to get it approved by insurance. And I'd say within a year and a half, she literally has a full head of hair now.
Yeah, amazing transformation. And I can imagine how it lifted her spirits.
Oh, yeah. She was not going out. She was a young single woman, was not going out, not doing anything. And I mean, I could never achieve those results with a transplant. It's the greatest transplant I've never had to do or been able to. I just can't do that. I mean, she's a whole different person.
We're talking about a JK inhibitor, Xeljanz, and there's other names of products that basically are treating an autoimmune disorder. Would that be a good description, Doc?
There's a genetic propensity. There's some trigger. And then there's an immune response that targets the hair follicles around the bulb area down in the subcutaneous fat. And the hair is not very, you know, our hair is very weak. And so any type of insult, and it just starts shedding the hair shaft. Mm-hmm. And so it's hyperimmune, if you want to think of it that way. And so this medicine is affecting your immune system, and it's calming that reaction down.
Good. And Jerry, you wanted to interject?
Yeah, you started off with asking me what's changed in the industry and how we approach on the consultation level, how we approach patients. What I have found in working with women over the years, in addition to everything else that was said before, I've seen a number of women that are so sensitive to their hair loss. I've even had a few over the years that have looked me straight in the eye in tears and said, I'm suicidal. And they get depressed. Hair loss is a big thing, much bigger for women than it is for men. And so what Mark is describing is truly life-changing, and especially in this lady's situation.
Yeah, it is. Well, let's shift gears for just a moment. There's a lot of talk today because of the frequency of practices that are using mechanical devices of promoting FUE and FUT. I'll let you explain the difference between FUT and FUE, if you would, Doc, and then we can kind of shift to how that trend is can be helpful, but also hurting the practice.
Okay. FUT is basically the traditional strip excision. FUE, or follicular unit excision, is where we individually go in with some sort of cutting tool. Some of them are manual powered. There's all kinds of different ones. And we take the graft out individually. So instead of removing a strip and then having a line scar on your back, on the back of your head, you go in individually, take the grafts out, and you can over the donor area. And you still have scars. They're little tiny dots, just not a big long, or it's not a linear scar like the traditional strip excision.
In your practice, what's the percentage of people you do with FUT or FUE?
So we are, we've traditionally been an FUT practice. We're still running probably 80, 90% FUT, and 10 to 20% FUE. Most of our patients, if we're doing big numbers, we want to shave the back of their head. A lot of our patients, especially the people who've already had one or two transplants with the strip, they don't want to shave their head because of the scarring. Most of my FUE patients now are patients who have been, we can't do any more strips, so we're going in just for fills, like smaller numbers, and younger patients, but predominantly still a strip.
Okay. And I talk a lot about the dangers of going to foreign countries in another podcast we created, because there is naturally a precedent for people to look for bargain rates in different places, but it can be disastrous. So we'll leave that to the other podcast. But Jerry, in your years of experience working with many doctors, what has been the trend in hair restoration surgery?
Yeah. Again, thanks, John. Going back to, you know, overseas hair transplantation, we've very quickly, I've seen great results and I've seen very poor results that need to be corrected. But that goes for the U.S. as well, working with a number of different doctors over the years. The doctors that have done nothing but FUT, and then doctors that have done nothing but FUE, and then doctors that have done both and used all types of FUE equipment. I agree with Dr. Waldman that probably 80% of hair restoration today is still the FUT method. But of those, and that's pretty much perfected at this point for someone that's a member of the ISHRS or American Board. The 20% that do FUE, it's a hodgepodge. You have individuals or clinics that, unfortunately, you know, there's some doctors that don't have experience in hair restoration and they buy an automated device. And, you know, I've seen and you've seen, John, chiropractors and OBGYNs doing hair restoration today.
Sure.
And they fly in technicians that don't really have the patient's best interest in mind, and it's all a numbers thing. And a lot of the automated devices are semi-automated devices, and I've worked with clinics that use both in the past. And for those clinics that do it by hand and do it the right way, like Dr. Waldman is doing, is certainly in the patient's best interest. Some of the suction devices and the, you know, robotic systems, you end up with more collateral damage. You end up with more hypopigmentation or microscopic scarring. You end up with a lot more transection, a number of different things, but that's a whole other conversation. It's really what's in the patient's best interest. And when you do an FUE, in my opinion today, it should be done by hand.
And in defense of people that come from other backgrounds in medicine, it doesn't mean that you can't learn how to be a great hair transplant surgeon. Certainly, we know many doctors, particularly some of the pioneers in hair transplantation, have come from other types of practices. So that doesn't necessarily exclude them from consideration. But it's all about, would you agree, Doc, it's all about the training that you have and your understanding of what the options are?
Yes. I mean, there are so many outstanding transplant surgeons around the world that, you know, come from different backgrounds. But if you look, they all have really good training and they're doing it themselves. They're not outsourcing it. You know, when I look at some of the top guys in the world, the backgrounds are various, not all surgical specialties that ended up doing this. But they're all guys who had great training and they're actually into it. It's not just something extra that they're trying to make some money off of by having the other room going, you know, have some techs doing it. So, and the other thing, you know, is if there are things in life you can really look to get a bargain on or, you know, kind of save some money. Hair transplant's probably not one of them because if it's bad, everyone sees it. There's no way to hide it. And so, you know, you can get a bad tattoo and cheap out on that, or you can get bad ketchup or something. You know, there's certain things you can chintz out on, but a hair transplant's not it. Because as you know, when we talked about that, I know there's one thing worse than being bald, and that's having an unnatural or just a really ridiculous looking hair transplant. And so, you know, you want to be smart. Doesn't mean you have to spend $1 million on it, but don't go for the cheapest, best gig. You know, try to do your research and find a place that is reputable and especially if you know someone who's already been there, it's a usually a good representation.
Yeah, to your point, I say that hair transplantation is permanent, and that could be permanently good or permanently bad, to underscore your point. But certainly, I think you'd recommend, and Jerry, I think you would too, is that be sure and have an interview with a doctor himself, ask about patients that are similar to your situation to see some examples of the work and ideally meet a patient or two, I would say, if you have any concern. What other guidelines, Jerry, would you emphasize? Yeah.
Well, a comment there and to, you know, take further what Dr. Waldman was saying. Just today, I had a phone consultation with a man that made the statement that he's only seen one transplant in his life, and it was a bad one. It was very pluggy, and I had to kind of giggle a little bit and say, well, most likely you've seen hundreds and perhaps even thousands, and you just don't know that they've had transplants today. When it's done right, it's so natural looking that you can't tell. But when someone had plugs done 30 years ago, of course, that's older technology. It's like the landline phone being replaced by the, you know, cell phone today. So technology has changed and improved vastly. Going back to, you know, what you and I have done over the years is we help provide education to patients and spend a lot of time with people that the doctors can't spend because the doctors like Dr. Waldman are in surgery and they're meeting with patients face to face in his dermatology practice as well as surgery. And so there's a need for what's considered a client advisor or consultant or director of patient education, whatever you want to call people like us to help to weed out those individuals that are not candidates. So doctors like Dr. Waldman don't have to spend an hour with someone that ultimately is not a candidate, because I got to tell you that 50% of the people I talk to are not candidates. They have one of the two limiting factors outside of medical. The two limiting factors are either not enough donor or not enough budget. They have too high of an expectation and they shouldn't have hair restoration. So I'm going to, you know, guess that about 50% of the people that I talk to, we don't recommend they even consider hair restoration in the first place.
Yeah, I was thinking as you were talking about how many people we see, but I think the three of us all have the curse of walking into a room of people or an area with a lot of people around, and while everybody else may be looking at clothes and other characteristics, we're all scanning their heads of hair.
Yeah, well, it is interesting to sit on an airplane over the years and look at the number of bald heads that I didn't pay attention to years ago, but yeah. Now I do.
Yeah. Dr. Waldman, anything you'd like to add as we come to a close in our talk today?
Well, I'm going to back up what Jerry said. You know, if patients are really interested in hair transplant or doing something about their hair loss, education and information is the key. And I don't know if I can't think of a better term, but you got to be careful about the mob mentality on the internet. Think for yourself, or patients should think for themselves, and try to get as educated as you can, but keep an open mind and be realistic about what your expectations are. And don't walk in the first person you see and say, okay, let's get it done. Maybe get a couple opinions, depending on what area you live or if you're not near somebody. There are a lot of places that do internet consults. So, you know, if two or three different reputable transplant surgeons are saying the same thing, you can feel pretty comfortable with wherever you go. But just education is the key. Don't rush into it.
So it's fair to say that both you guys are available to talk to people that are interested in hair restoration. Jerry, how do people get a hold of you?
Oh, they can certainly give me a call. My phone number is, if you want me to give that, is 859-327-1774. That's my personal cell. You can text or call it. My personal email address is my first and last name at me.com. So that's JerryDavis@me.com, and I'll be happy to help.
And Dr. Waldman, thank you. And Dr. Waldman, how would you like to be approached by someone who has listened today and wants to hear more from you?
They can call our office at area code 502-585-5249, or our website is hairsurgery.com. It's all one word, hairsurgery.com.
Oh, that's great. Well, gentlemen, Dr. Mark Waldman, Louisville, Kentucky, Jerry Davis, experienced consultant with years of helping people restore their hair. Thank you for being a part of our program today. And for you listeners, be sure and take a look at my book, Hair Loss Dossier, The Big Lie About the Causes, Cures, Treatments, and Scam, available on Amazon and all other platforms. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you,
John. Thank you, Mark. Thank you.